sometimes it's easier to sing, "Be still my soul," than it is to actually have your soul be still. By soul, I mean the part of us that longs for a relationship with God. Like we sang in that beautiful chorus, as the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you, for you alone are my heart's desire, and I long to worship you. We are all born with a soul, and we are all born with a longing to be in relationship with God. Now, some people don't feed that longing, and so after a while, the longing sort of withers up and goes away, and people say, "Oh, I don't need God." But I believe that all of us here have at least realized that we have a longing, a need to be in relationship with God, or you wouldn't be here on this day. And so we all long to be in relationship with God, but sometimes there are those times when we just feel like our relationship with God is not what it should be. And we feel alone, and there is a sickness in our soul. Now, it could happen for various reasons. Sometimes it happens when we've had a problem with a relationship and things just don't seem to go right. Even when we follow all the things that we talked about last week, when we talked about the sicknesses in our relationships, and it seems like nothing is going right there, and it affects our soul and our relationship with God, for we say, "Why, God? Why does this have to happen?" Or maybe things are not going well at work or some other thing, and we think, "Why? Why me? Why does this have to happen to me?" Or then, of course, when we are ill and we struggle with our own health and we wonder, why God, why does this have to happen? Or when there is a death to someone that we love and we wonder and it makes us feel distant away from God. Or sometimes it's just for no reason at all. Somehow we just feel all alone and feel like we are far from God and feel like we're sinking away, 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 away from God. And that God is someplace way out there, and we're someplace in a little hole, far from God. That's what I call having sickness of the soul. When we feel far away from God and feel like God's way out there and we're way in here, and somehow it's just not right. Now, those times of sickness in the soul happen to all of us. Even the most devout, even the ones that are closest to God, there will be times when we feel a sickness in our soul. But as our bulletin cover suggests, the Lord will take all sickness from you. And that's what we're thinking about here in the month of January. All kinds of sicknesses. Last week we talked about sicknesses in relationship. Next week we'll talk about sicknesses of the mind and then of the body. But today we're thinking about sickness of the soul. Those moments when we feel far away from God. What can we do? How can we deal with that? Well, here to say it happens to all of us, and even great prophets. So our scripture today is a story of a great prophet. His name was Elijah, and he was very close to God. And actually, lots and lots of wonderful things, or terrible things happened because he said it. I mean, he said there was going to be a drought, and there was a drought. He was very successful in what he said because, you see, he lived at a time that Israel was turning away from God. The king was King Ahab, and his wife was Queen Jezebel. How many of you know somebody named Jezebel? No, we don't name little girls Jezebel. This is why, because she was not a nice woman. That's why. But anyway, she was queen. And the prophet Elijah had come by, and he was trying to call people back to God. And the scripture today follows a big contest that he had with 450 prophets of Baal. Now, Baal was the Canaanite god, the statue of fertility. Elijah was trying to say, that's not God. We worship God, the creator of the universe, the great God of Israel, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is the God that we worship. Well, he called all these prophets of Baal together, and he built two altars. Now, about 9 years ago, I preached on this story, and here was our worship setting. Over here, we had a big pile of wood, and we had another big pile of wood over here. And Bob took all the kids and some of the adults, and they were the prophets of Baal. And they walked around this, and they danced, and they shouted, oh, Baal, send fire down, because that's what he had challenged them. He said, we'll put a bull on both of them, and then you pray to your God to send down fire, and I'll pray to my God, and we'll see which one. So the prophets of Baal shouted and danced, and oh, send fire, Baal, and nothing happened. But I got to be Elijah. I always give Bob the bad parts, right? And so I was Elijah over here. And so when after they had had their time, then I was Elijah, and I pray. Actually, Elijah had them even pour water on the wood. Well, I think I had the kids pretend. I don't think I really had them pour water here. But anyway, we were over here at this one, and then I prayed the prayer that Elijah prayed. They said, oh, Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known on this day that you, O Lord, are God of Israel, and that I am your prophet, and I am doing these things by your bidding. Answer me, O Lord, that they may know you are God. And at that moment, I had somebody in the choir flip the button, and a fan that was on the inside with some red crepe paper and ribbons, and there was a red light, came on, and the crepe paper and the ribbons came up, and it looked like fire. It was great. It just looked like fire, especially the little kids were like, oh, it was great. But even their amazement was nothing compared to the real story, because the real story was that fire came down from heaven, and it not only burned up the bull that was on the fire and the wood, it burned up the rocks as well. And so here is my altar with a little crepe paper. Can't see it too well. But anyway, Elijah really got those people all fired up, because they were amazed that God sent down fire. And they rose up, and they took those 450 prophets of Baal and took them down to the river and killed them all. Woo, that was big success, right? So he was really going on. He was beyond success there. He had killed all those 450 prophets of Baal, and things were going great. And then Jezebel heard about it. Jezebel was upset. And instead of being scared, she threatened Elijah. And she says, by tomorrow, you'll get what you gave to those prophets of Baal. Well, you'd think that Elijah would have been strong. I mean, he just had God bring down fire. You think Elijah would have said to Jezebel, oh, yeah, just try. But no, what he did was he got scared, frightened, and he ran away. Now, before you get too critical of Elijah, have you ever done something that everybody thinks great and they give you lots and lots of compliments, and one person says something negative and you go home? What do you think about? The negative thing. Yeah, right. Been there, done that. So that's kind of what happened to Elijah. I mean, he had lots of power behind him, but Jezebel said something and that's all he could think about. And he was scared and he ran away. And he was so scared that he even prayed that God would just let him die right there, because he was so scared. And what he ends up doing is walking for 40 days and 40 nights, and he gets to this place, Mount Horeb, or we know it as Mount Sinai. So he's there, and while he's there, this happens. He has this sense. He hears the voice that says, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Now there was a great wind so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in an earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in the mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" The word of God for the people of God. Well, there he was. He was on this mountain. And he heard the voice, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he complained to God, and God gave him instructions, and he went ahead, and somehow he was refreshed, and he went on with his ministry, and God was successful again. But what I wanted us to realize is that it was in the sheer silence, the silence, that he heard God. And finally, he was refreshed. He went on with his ministry. But what does that have to say to us when we are in those deep, dark nights of the soul, the whole feeling when we are there? I hope that we kind of at least can realize, go home today, that we're not the only ones who've ever been in the dark night of the soul. So when you're in those times, at least realize that it happened to Elijah. It happens to most of the really famous, or even not so famous, most of us who have a relationship with God. There will be times that we feel like we're in a dark night of the soul. And so just knowing that we're not really alone there in that dark hole might help a little bit. But what else do we need to know? What did Elijah do that helped him? As I looked at this story, it seemed to me that there are two real important things that he did. First of all, he went to a holy place. He went to a holy place. This is Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai. Now, what else happened at Mount Sinai that you might know of? And I give you a hint. Charlton Heston played in the movie. At Mount Sinai, what happened? The Ten Commandments. God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. You know, and there was the smoke and the fire. We all saw it. And we've seen it on television, you know, every year, right? All right. This was at Mount Sinai. It was a holy place. And so he went to that holy place to seek God. I suggest to you that one of the good things to do when you feel like you are in this dark night of the soul, and when you feel like you're in a black hole, a good place to go to is some kind of holy place. In our Bible study that we will begin tomorrow and Tuesday, as we're looking at the prayer paths of Jesus, the first week is about solitude and about being on retreat. And it has us think about places that we have been on retreat, where we like to go, that remind us of places where we have experienced and encountered God. For me, one of the places that I will talk about is Lake Huron Retreat Center. I love to go to Lake Huron Retreat Center. It's a beautiful place, and this is the morning sunrise. You have to get up early in the morning in the summertime to get there, but in the wintertime, it's a little later. And to see that sunrise over Lake Huron just always gives me a feeling of closeness to God. But there have been other places in my life. One of them, when we lived in Monroe, we were just a block from the Raisin River. And I loved to get up early in the morning while the kids were still all asleep. And I'd go down to the Raisin River and just watch the river go by. It somehow was a way of starting my day that made me realize God's love just washed through me like the river flowed through there. And so it was a wonderful way to start that. But you know, now that I live in the city, it's not so easy to get to a river. Or maybe even if you go to Hines Park, you're not so sure you want to go there and be there all by yourself too often. And so where I like to go here is my back porch. I have a lovely back porch. And in the summertime, it's nice to see my flowers. Or in the wintertime, there's a special chair in the living room. Or I have a chair down in the basement in a meditation area. However, it's a little out of repair right now, a little too dusty. Because, you see, I've been out in the porch all summer and then moved in and we had the Christmas tree. And I like to be in front of the Christmas tree. If we ever get the Christmas tree down, I might clean up my meditation area in the basement. Hopefully that might happen this week or maybe next week. I don't know, whenever we get around to it. But it's a good area to have a place where you like to go. But as nice as it is to have a place in your house where you can go, it's even nicer to have somewhere outside of the house, away from the house, where you go away in order to encounter God. For Elijah, he walked 40 days and 40 nights. Well, I'm not even advocating. You might walk 40 minutes or 40 seconds or whatever, but it's nice to get away. Well, one place that I would recommend that is in just a bit of disrepair right now, but is our upper room prayer room. It's right, you take the elevator up to 2 and go straight and you will find the upper room prayer room. Now it's not quite so great right now because Barb Obafishis was taking care of it and then she wasn't able to do that anymore and we really didn't have anyone else to take care of it. But now Friday, Diana Command has volunteered and we were up there and she has great plans for it. But even before that, you can still go up there because there are different stations, 6 different stations that have suggestions for prayer. But in the middle of the room is a special place. How many of you have been up there? Do you know about that? In the middle. Don, it seems like there's a little echo here. I don't know if you can turn me down just a little bit. But in the middle of the room, there is this wonderful chair. And Rick Higgins is illustrating there. It's a chair, when you sit in it, you just feel enfolded. And the idea is to sit in it for 10 minutes and let God love you. Isn't that nice? I got that idea when I was reading a book on prayer, and an older woman was sharing about her prayer time, and she said, well, I just say all the things I have to say, and then when I don't have anything more to say, I just sit and let God love me. And I thought, oh, that's a new concept for me, because usually when I was praying, I just filled up my prayer time with words. But if you sit and let God love you, then perhaps you'll experience the holiness of that sheer silence that Elijah experienced in his holy place. And so I recommend the prayer room, or I recommend that you find some holy place. But find an holy place, something that's meant something to someone else. This room has meant a lot to me. I've gone there many times and had many encounters with God there. I remember one time that I was feeling kind of low and feeling like things weren't coming out right. And I went upstairs, and at several of the stations, there's a little pad of paper where people can write prayers. And I sat down and I read some of the prayers that some of the other people had written. And this one prayer was written by a child. Didn't have a name signed. But it was obvious it was a child's writing and spelling. And it was a prayer for Reverend Diana, because we love her so much. Oh, can I tell you what an uplift it was to my soul to go up there and to find a prayer written by a child for me. No, I came flying down. Everything was much better after that. You just never can tell what's going to happen in those holy places. Maybe it'll be the sheer silence. Maybe it'll be something written by someone else that just touches your soul. Maybe, we don't know what it could be. But you go to a holy place. Go to a holy place like Elijah did, and then wait for God. Wait for God. It may take a while, But you wait for God. And you look, and you look, and you look some more. Maybe you need to test your vision because God is closer than you think. That little vision sign there is the logo for our Lenten study. Can you read what it says? God is closer than you think, by John Ortberg. It kind of gets closer and closer. And so during Lent, we're going to be looking at the various ways that God is closer than we think. But even before we get to Lent, we can look around and see God in various places. In the song we sang this morning, "This is my Father's world," we said, "In the rustling grass, I hear him pass. God speaks to me everywhere." Where is God speaking to you? Oftentimes, it is through nature. Oftentimes, it's through nature that God speaks to us. Last month, I told you about an email that I got, and I thought it's worth repeating because it really goes in here with Elijah. Because Elijah looked first for nature, you know, through the earthquake and the fire and the wind. Wasn't there that time, but Elijah knew that oftentimes God works through nature. And this email, if you remember, it said, the man said to God, "God, speak to me." And the meadowlark sang, but the man did not hear. Then God shouted, "God, speak to me." And the thunder and the lightning flashed and shouted, but he did not hear. Then the man said, "God, let me see you." And the stars twinkled in the heavens, but the man did not see. And then the man said, "God, show me a miracle." And a child was born, but the man didn't notice. Then the man said, "Touch me. Touch me and let me know you are here." And God reached down and touched the man. But the man just brushed the butterfly away. God speaks to us in many ways, but are we watching? Are we listening? Do we hear? I repeated this again because it reminded me afterwards, someone else reminded me of something they had told me much earlier. It was a woman who was depressed about her husband's death. And as she was walking one day, as she turned the corner on a bush, she noticed a monarch butterfly. And as she stood and looked at this monarch butterfly, just was there was a peace that came over her. She had been so depressed about the death of her husband, but as she watched this butterfly, there was a peace, and it was like God was saying to her, life goes on. There is life beyond. And there was a peace. Well, the next day she took a walk, went by the same place, and guess what was on the bush again? A butterfly. She'd never seen a butterfly before there and never noticed it. The third day she walked by, and again on the third day that butterfly was there. Only on that third day the butterfly flew up and landed on her shoulder. She said, "The butterfly's never landed on my shoulder." But somehow she felt that was a sign from God. She was open to seeing God's presence. And she said, "Every time now that I seem to get depressed, somehow a butterfly comes into my life. Maybe it's just a picture or some other thing, but somehow that butterfly has become a symbol to me that everything's okay." And it certainly is a symbol of new life. We use it in Easter as a symbol of life beyond death, a new life. And so she was open to the signs that God gave her. Are we open to that? Can we say, "It is well with my soul"? But that doesn't mean that it's always going to be easy and that things are going to fall in just like we want and life's going to be a rose garden. No, it means there'll be difficult times, but God will help us through those difficult times. And we can say, it is well with my soul. We are going to be singing the song, It Is Well With My Soul, as our closing hymn. I've always loved that song, even since I was a child. I liked it as a child because it has this really nice echo. You sing, it is well, and the men go, it is well. Oh, I always love it when the men get that, you know, those, it is well. I like that as a song, but I like it even more as I began to know the song, the reason and the story behind that song. For you see, it was written by Horatio Spafford, and he's shown here. He was a very successful lawyer in Chicago and very much in love with his wife, Anna Spafford, who was from Norway. And they lived in a lovely home in Chicago, and he was well-to-do. He had lots of different property. He was very active in his church and with Dwight Moody, the evangelist, and very faithful. Things were going well. And then, that was about 1871. Do you know what happened in Chicago, 1871? There was a great fire, and things were destroyed. His home was destroyed. All his property was destroyed. And so all his life savings was wiped out. Well, he made it through that, though, and his wife was a little depressed, and he wanted to send her back to Europe for a vacation. And so he got together. 2 years later, he was able to save up enough money, and so they were going to Europe on a vacation that he hoped would cheer his wife, and they went with some friends, and they had four lovely little daughters, but right at the last minute, something happened with his business, and he couldn't go, but he was going to follow them, and they went on the ship. But as they were mid-Atlantic Ocean, their ship collided with an iron vessel, and it sank in 12 minutes. And his wife was rescued. She was unconscious when they rescued her, but when she got to Europe, she cabled him back, saved alone, what shall I do? And all four of her children drowned. So, of course, he immediately set sail to go to Europe to bring her back home. And when they got to the place that was approximately where the ship had gone down, the captain called him and said, this is the place where your daughter's drowned, approximately in here. And he wrote to his sister-in-law at that point. He said, I went over the place where our daughters drowned, but I know they're not there because I know they are safe in the arms of God. And then later, he wrote these words, it is well with my soul. And so when we sing that, when we sing the sea billows roll, you know what pain was behind that, but yet he was able to say, it is well with my soul. How is it with your soul on this day? Are you able to say, it is well with my soul? If you are, you can get through those difficult times that life brings us, times like Horatio Spafford had. But if it is not well with your soul, then you need to look at the bulletin cover and realize that the Lord will take all sickness from you. God is here reaching out to take whatever sickness is in your life, to take that from you. And as our worship setting suggests, it's the light of Christ that comes down and surrounds us with healing. And so we say, is it well with your soul? Let this light of Christ come surround you with healing. Yes, know that when you are in that deep, dark hole, feeling far away from God, other people have been there like you. Let that help you a little bit. But then know that as you go to holy places and keep your eyes and ears open, God will speak to you in some way. Maybe it will be in the silence. Maybe it will be through something someone else has written. Maybe it will be in a butterfly. Maybe it will be in a beautiful song. Whatever way it is, God will come to you and you can say, "It is well with my soul." I hope you will experience that closeness with God in these next few minutes, for we have a wonderful present today. This was meant to be a special birthday present for Ralph Weigel as Stacy Mason comes to sing and to pray and to play her violin for us. But it's a present to all of us. For I hope that as she sings our prayer, that we will be able to realize that our soul is well, that it can be raised up by God. So our prayer is, "You raise me up, O God," as we hear this beautiful song. Let us have our hearts open to the ways God will raise us.